Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a brand new week of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790, and this is the show where we give you the inside scoop on everything going on with your favorite basketball team. Today's Locked On Rockets is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So as we chat on this Monday afternoon, the news is finally official. The Rockets have their 15-man roster to open the season. Bobby Brown, Tyler Ennis, Kyle Wiltshire, they all made the team. Pablo Prigioni did not. Now, this was a bit of a head fake. There was a report out at midday that Tyler Ennis would be the odd man out and that Pablo Prigioni was making the team. As it turns out, they flipped that with Ennis staying and Pablo going. Now, the one constant in all of this, it was obvious that Bobby Brown was going to make the team. No matter who was on the way out, it was not him. And I've said throughout this preseason that I would be surprised if Brown made the team. He did not play with the rotation very much. It didn't seem like he was a high consideration. So I know a lot of you are wondering, what changed? To me, it was the revised timetable for Pat Beverly's injury. Now, I know the Rockets have been steadfast all along in saying that they're not really concerned, but something clearly shifted because games 4 and 5 of the preseason, you had KJ McDaniels starting alongside James Harden, Eric Gordon off the bench with the stated logic of, well, we want to keep Gordon in the same role that he's going to be in when Pat returns. And then for game 6, they flipped back because it was confirmed that Beverly was going to miss at least part of the regular season. So it's obvious that this caught the Rockets off guard. They were not able to prepare the entire preseason like they were going to be without Pat Beverly for as much as the first 20 games of this season, which is what Mike D'Antoni is now saying. So how this shifts the dynamics is because with Gordon going to the starting lineup, there is a clear need for more creation off the bench. I'm sure you'll have Nene up front, and in theory you could sign Donatas Moniunis, although who knows what the hell is going on there. You could have some front court scoring. But with regards to the guys that are playing at the wing spots, Sam Decker's a rookie, and he's more of a four, it sounds like anyway, if you listen to D'Antoni. Then you have KJ McDaniels, Corey Brewer, Tyler Ennis, and you would have had Pablo Prigioni. The thing about all of those guys, they cannot really create off the dribble. They each have a defined role. With Brewer, it's the transition game and slashing. With KJ McDaniels, it's his play off the ball. They hope he can be a three-point shooter. We'll see. Ennis, and if they had kept Pablo Prigioni, they're both pick-and-roll, traditional-minded point guards. None of them are the type that can create their own offense, and that's something that the Rockets brought in Eric Gordon and paid him a lot of money to do. Now, I don't think that means that Bobby Brown is going to be a rotation guy, but I think they want that option in case it becomes a glaring deficiency. Because you know what? The opening of the schedule is not easy. 7 of the first 8 games are on the road. And so I think the Rockets want to have as diverse a toolkit as possible. So when you look at Bobby Brown, yeah, he had 23 points and 9 assists in the preseason finale in San Antonio. But really, he's a scorer. Yes, he can initiate the offense, but really, he could be a good shooter. He got those 23 points on 20 shots. But the real thing that stands out, on a Rockets roster without James Harden, without Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, Bobby Brown was one of the only guys on that entire roster, including several confirmed rotation players, that looked really comfortable against the Spurs creating his own offense. And part of it comes, he's a veteran. He's 32 years old. He's played professionally a long time. So, you know, he's got some confidence. He's not just a rookie, but he's got the kind of game that he can create off the dribble. And it's a little ironic because the Rockets traded away Michael Beasley because he was, you know, a little too inefficient for their liking. And certainly Bobby Brown is not Mr. Efficiency, as evidenced by taking 20 shots to get those 23 points. However, circumstances change what your needs are. And so I think when the Rockets went into this season, they were imagining a three-man rotation in the backcourt of James Harden, Pat Beverley, and Eric Gordon. And so when you have those three guys, especially with Harden and Gordon, you were guaranteed to have someone on the court virtually at all times that could create their own offense, that could create their own shot. So you weren't going to get in a desperation mode where the ball gets sticky as it did for so often of the early second and early fourth quarters a year ago when James Harden would go to the bench. That was the plan, and then that plan shifted. So without Eric Gordon on your bench, you need a little more creation. And whereas before, Pablo Prigioni made sense as the fourth or fifth guard because of his, you know, because you already had enough creation, and so you could have a more traditional-minded option. Now you don't really have that luxury. The other thing is that when you acquired Tyler Ennis, that gave you another traditional point guard. When the Rockets signed Prigioni in July, Ennis was not on the roster, and you know, you can make the argument that even Pat Beverley's not really a traditional point guard. Certainly James Harden's the point guard by title right now. So Prigioni, he was unique when they signed him. But a little bit of his uniqueness went away when they signed Ennis, and a little bit of their ability to have a pure point guard in that fourth guard role went away when Pat Beverley ended up missing more time than they expected. So the dynamics shifted. The other thing that has to be considered, these late roster spots, they're kind of like lottery tickets. You know these guys are probably not going to be regular rotation players. So if they're not going to be regular rotation players, most teams, especially analytics-focused ones like the Rockets, they want to focus on the upside. Since they're not going to play anyway, why would you have a veteran at the end of the bench? What you want are players that conceivably have upside, that you can work with them off the court, Kyle Wiltshire being an example, Tyler Ennis being an example, and you know what? Maybe over time they can develop into something. So when Brown's odds went up of making the team for the reasons we just discussed, that also took Pablo's down. Because if you had had both Brown and Prigioni making the roster, that would be two of your final roster spots going to 32 and 39-year-old players who quite obviously have a ceiling. It's not a very Daryl Morey thing to do to give two of the final roster spots to guys without upside. So I think the odds were always in favor of only one of Brown and Prigioni making the team. In other words, only one spot was going to be earmarked for a veteran point guard. And the shifting dynamics of Beverly's injury made Bobby Brown a better fit for that spot than Tyler Ennis. Made Bobby Brown a better fit for that spot than Pablo Prigioni was. Other thing, Tyler Ennis and Pablo Prigioni, they're very similar. Touched on earlier. Now, I think Prigioni knows his role a little more, whereas Ennis, obviously, his third-year first-round pick a couple years back, Ennis is certainly quicker. But both of them are pick-and-roll point guards. They don't create off the dribble. You're looking at them when you want a structured point guard to run the pick and roll and to organize your offense. So do you really want two guys that have fairly similar skill sets, or would you rather have one guy like that and then another that's a little more of a creator, which is what Bobby Brown is? I think there were a lot of things pointing to Prigioni and Ennis not making the team together. And for whatever reason, it looked like that Ennis was going to be the odd man out first, ended up being Prigioni. But at the end of the day, it makes sense what they're doing, and it's not a matter of the Rockets flip-flopping. I think it's just the evolution of Pat Beverley's injury that forced them to take a little bit different course than they may have thought they were this time, even a couple of weeks ago. Now, the other late addition that I think we can all agree on, Kyle Wiltshire made the team. So happy for him. When you're looking at a guy with a power forwards body that is an elite shooter, and my goodness, he was great in the preseason shooting the ball, regularly beat out even Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon during three-point competitions that the Rockets had during training camp and throughout the preseason. It's just so intriguing to see a player of his body and his height that could shoot it that well. They don't grow on trees. Now, the rest of his game, he definitely needs to improve. He needs to get stronger. He needs to get better defensively. There's a reason he was undrafted out of Kentucky. Certainly got a lot of exposure in college. Not like he just fell under the radar. So he had some clear deficiencies. But when you have one elite skill that is that good, it's something to work with. Combine that with a great attitude and a system like the one Mike D'Antoni runs and like James Harden prefers, which means having shooters everywhere to space the floor. It was just a really good fit for Kyle Wiltshire in Houston. He's a great kid, works hard, could not be happier for him. And I think he's going to be useful for this team as the season moves forward. We heard Kyle the other day say that he chose the Rockets in part because he saw how Mike D'Antoni revitalized Steve Novak's career as a range big. And I think Steve Novak on those early Rockets teams back in 2008, 2009, the Rick Adelman days, I think that could be a good comparison. Is he going to play every day? I don't know about that, but certainly you can have a role for him, and he can potentially hit some very big shots in this system. Now, that's not the only Rocket story of the day. We have the final cuts. There is also a big news story on ESPN.com about Dwight Howard last season and the Rockets, led by James Harden, Daryl Morey, and Les Alexander, allegedly wanting to limit his minutes before interim coach J.B. Bickerstaff resisted. I'm going to get to that story in a minute and be joined by Salman Ali, managing editor of RedNationHoops.com, to break that down. But before I get there, I do want to throw a quick acknowledgement to our sponsor at SeatGeek. Because if you look at the ticket marketplace around the NBA and you want to see any of the players like we've just been talking about, SeatGeek is one of the best sites out there and really the best app out there to find tickets for those games that you want to see in person. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is so freaking easy to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find seats for any game all year, including the Rockets' home opener this weekend against Dallas. You also know that you're getting the best bang for your buck, because they do the price comparisons by searching multiple ticket sites, and they even grade every ticket based on value so that you know you're getting the best deals. And remember, every ticket on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop and buy tickets with the full confidence knowing that those deals are in fact legit. Anyway, here's the most important part. To get your $20 rebate, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, and then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. Anyway, to jump back into the show, I want to really get into that Dwight Howard story. I don't know how relevant it is today because obviously Dwight Howard is gone. He's with the Atlanta Hawks. But boy, this story from Tim McMahon of ESPN.com, it's juicy. A lot of things behind the apparent dysfunction with the Rockets in the 2015-2016 season and the path that led them to the team they are today, led by Mike D'Antoni. So again, to break that down, I'm now joined by Salman Ali, the managing editor of RedNationHoops.com. Salman, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back.
I'm sure you saw the story on ESPN this morning about Dwight Howard and Rockets brass, specifically James Harden, GM Daryl Morey, owner Les Alexander, supposedly wanting to give him a lesser role last year and then interim coach J.B. Bickerstaff resisting. There's a lot in this story. I know you originally said on Twitter that you were skeptical of large parts. Just tell me your reaction when you saw that story. Obviously, this is rehashing stuff that's already over and done with, but there's a lot of loaded material in there, I would say. So give me your thoughts.
Yeah, the first thing I really took note of is like the timing of this story coming out right now as the Rockets are about to start their first regular season game. Why is it coming out right now? Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of motive behind it? Did some bitter agent leak it? You know, did a player leak it? You know, is it coming from a place of ill will, you know, to try to damage the Rockets PR-wise? And, you know, that's really my first suspicion when it came out. And then I went ahead and read it, and I went ahead and looked at the details. And, you know, this idea that J.B. Bickerstaff, an interim head coach, which you pointed out, very young, 36 years old, would throw his weight around to the organization. Yeah. And, you know, an organization that's telling him to play Dwight Howard less minutes in favor of Clint Capella. I can't buy that. Presumably anybody in that position would do anything they're asked of to in order to keep their job. You know, your ass is on the line, so you do whatever you're asked.
Yeah.
And so that's a premise I didn't really get. And, you know, overall the story, I'm not going to say there isn't some truth in this. Like, I know the organization is high on Clint Capella.
Yeah.
And that does seem to be where they're headed as far as the starting center position during the season. And I think there is something to be said for that. But I think last year, the fact that the Rockets went as far as to try and keep Dwight Howard in the free agency, I mean, it was very clear. Like a lot of fans were confused as to why the organization was still trying to keep Dwight Howard in the beginning of free agency. And it was very clear that it was definitely a goal for them to try and, you know, and bring Dwight Howard back, because there's no better use of that money, of that cap space, other than Dwight Howard, if we're being like a real cold hard capologist about it. And the fact that they tried to bring Dwight back, it tells me that, you know, they do value Dwight enough to give him the proper amount of minutes. And, and so overall, I don't buy the story.
I don't buy
the story that much.
Yeah, see, I see kernels of truth, but I think they're exaggerated. Now, one area that we're a little bit different, I don't think they were 100% dead set against bringing Dwight back. I don't know that it was that heavy of a consideration. I think both parties wanted that angle out there, the Rockets wanting to bring back Dwight, because it's beneficial to them. Dwight, because it builds his market. The Rockets, because, you know, they want to be seen as supportive for star players. If there's one thing that's clear about the Rockets from a management perspective, they want to be seen as sticking up for their stars. We've seen what Les Alexander, Tad Brown, the way they defend James Harden. I don't know how much they truly wanted him back. You know, I feel like that Brian Anderson and Eric Gordon, along with a renegotiated Harden, was a good use of the cap space. However, I'm fully with you with regards to how it played out last year. I could see Harden, you know, we know Harden and Capella's games seem to mesh really well, probably better than Harden and Dwight's ever did. And so I could see Harden and Morey, especially when Morey came to the conclusion that, you know what, they're not going to be able to win a title last year. So I could see both of them, you know, having the discussion. But as far as issuing a full mandate and then Bickerstaff rejecting that mandate, that seems a little extreme. You know, I could see Bickerstaff wanting to gamble on his veterans, the guys he's been to war with before, and maybe pushing back a little bit. But I don't think it was as clear-cut as you know, Harden, Morey, and Les Alexander gave him this mandate, and then he said, no, screw it, and did his own thing. You know, I think maybe there was, you know, a little bit of a nudge, and maybe JB resisted that nudge, but the story is oversold for the drama of it, you know. Besides that, I feel like the thing with Dwight, we've seen this, it's not just Dwight, I shouldn't say him, but the people around him, when he goes to new situations, Dwight definitely goes on a bit of a PR tour. If you remember earlier this summer, there was that Q&A he did with Jackie McMullen, where apparently he alleged that Gerald Morey said to give him less shots to not have him as involved on offense. And this, to me, feels like, probably not Dwight specifically, but someone around him may have had a motivation to, you know what, point out yet again that, you know what, maybe this situation wasn't ideal for him, and to try and get him a fresh start in Atlanta. That's the only thing I can think of. We know Dwight does these kind of, I'd say, image PR tours in the media, and that's what this kind of feels like to me. Do you see that as at all possible?
Yeah, and I largely agree with you. I don't want to make this a Dwight Howard bashing session, because he did so much for the community here in Houston, and he's a really great guy once you get to know him. My biggest thing is, like, you know, these anonymous sources, it could be anybody. It could be an agent that's, you know, it could be Dwight's agent. It could be somebody in his peer group. It could be in other teams, you know, competing teams that don't want, you know, there's a lot of positive PR around the Rockets right now. So, you know, if you throw a little kernel of doubt as far as the culture of this franchise, you know, it gives you a leg up inside and create, and, you know, and maybe that's a stretch, but we have seen GMs come out and say that does happen, you know, that you know, bashing other franchises through the media that stuff does happen. So we don't know. We don't know where the story's coming from. And the timing of it, that's what really bugs me. Why is it coming out right now? You know, if this story was to come out, you'd think it would have came out, you know, as soon as Dwight Howard departed and all the stuff would, you know, all the stuff already came out by now. And it's just strange. The timing, like, if it came out earlier in the summer, I would be more lenient on listening to it. Right now, it's strange.
Yeah, 2 days before the season, you know, this reeks of a story that would have come out in June, July, right before free agency, or maybe right after it, to build his narrative in Atlanta, to come out 2 days before the season. Yeah, that's really odd, because even the scenario I'm throwing out there of, you know, him trying, you know, someone in his circle trying to, you know, rebuild his rep in Atlanta, why in the world would it just come out now? There's a lot of odd things with the story. I don't think it's a complete lie, because Tim McMahon of ESPN, based in Dallas, he's a good reporter, got a lot of connections, but I certainly think it can be, certain things are overplayed a little bit. It's something where there's a little truth underneath it, but it's overdone. Anyway, Solomon,
we should be fair to these reporters, because, you know, it's their duty to report what's said to them. So, and it's hard to kind of filter out what's true and what's not. Their job is to report. And I can't really blame Tig McMahon for reporting what he heard. It's just the timing of, you know, when he heard these things that bothers me.
Yep, absolutely. Anyway, Solomon, thank you so much for the time. Before you go, why don't you toss out your Twitter handle, as well as anything you guys are working on over at RedNationHoops.com.
Sure. My Twitter handle is at RedNationHoops. You can follow the site at RedNationHoops.com. I'm working on a season preview for the Rockets, so look out for that. We're going to be doing game day previews for the Lakers matchup. So, yeah, we have a lot of stuff coming out. We're going to have a podcast coming out tomorrow morning, so you guys can look forward to that. And, yeah, that's what we got going on right now.
Excellent. Thanks so much for the time, buddy, and I'll be catching up with you soon, okay?
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing. I think we've said all that needs to be said. It's old news, so it's pointless to talk too much about it. The only thing I would disagree with Solomon a little bit about, I don't know how serious the Rockets really were about bringing him back. I know that report came out in June, and I always felt that was a little overplayed for the sake of, you know, both Dwight's image and the Rockets' image. I think they're pretty happy with how things turned out. Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, and an extended James Harden. I feel like those are ideal uses of $40 million in cap space for a Mike D'Antoni team. Obviously, there's history also between Mike D'Antoni and Dwight Howard, so I don't know that they really wanted him back. However, the idea that that he was so far out the window that Maury, Harden, Les Alexander gave this mandate, and then a 36-year-old interim coach said no, that's a little extreme. I think maybe there was a hint, and JB wanted to gamble on the veterans, but it wasn't as strong as the story said. The other issue that we didn't address, but I do want to talk about it because I saw people asking about it on Twitter. People said, well, if this story is true, or if there's any truth at all, why didn't Maury give up Dwight at the trade deadline? Well, here's the thing. He tried to. The asking price, we found out after the fact, was not all that high. Now, of course, the Rockets started with a high asking price, but I think in the, you know, final couple of days and hours before the trade deadline, yes, they were absolutely open to moving him on a short deal. And actually, it got as far as, you know, Milwaukee communicating with Dwight's representatives and asking if Dwight would consider opting in for the next year of his deal on to continue his existing contract and basically make sure that they would have him for two more months. So I do think that they seriously looked at moving him because they would have liked to have gotten even more of an evaluation on Clint Capella. However, that doesn't mean they're going to just give him away for scraps. First off, just because they wanted to diminish his role doesn't mean that they saw the team as better without him. Even a diminished role, you know, Dwight Howard, that's 20 to 25 minutes per game as a, you know, part-time center. That still has a lot of value. Secondly, you know, there's a lot of veterans on the Rockets. They were just in the Western Conference Finals 1 year earlier, and, you know, both of the first two seasons, playoff Dwight, you guys know what I'm talking about, was tremendous. So there was always an opportunity. There was always the chance that, you know what, once it gets to the playoffs, and the Rockets did make the playoffs, well, maybe Dwight could have some turn-back-the-clock performances. So I think it's one of those things where the Rockets, yes, they wanted to move Dwight, but they were not just going to give him away. They were not just going to trade him into cap space. There is some value in him being a part-time center. There is value in keeping him around for the playoffs. And quite frankly, there's value in not giving him away because, you know what? That sets a bad tone for future negotiations with Daryl Morey. If other teams think they can just wait him out, and then, you know what, he'll just throw the player away because he thinks the team is better off without him. I think there are a lot of factors that the Rockets look to deal Dwight, but I don't think they were desperate to. And that goes back to the original theme of, you know, the alleged conversations between Morey, Harden, Les Alexander, and J.B. Bickerstaff about diminishing Dwight's minutes. I think they were open to doing that and broached the subject, but I don't think it was as desperate or as forced as that ESPN.com article would make it seem. And with that, I think we can wrap up the show on this Monday afternoon. Again, I'm Ben DuBose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. This is Locked On Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And you can always email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me or if you'd like to inquire about becoming a sponsor of this rapidly growing podcast. Again, thanks to today's sponsor, SeatGeek. If you download their mobile app, you can find a very easy way to buy tickets. And if you use the promo code LORockets, you can actually get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So thanks again to SeatGeek, the sponsor for today's show. And also, thanks to all of you for listening. You're a big part of why we're able to do this every day, why we have the listens to justify bringing this to you on a daily basis. Want to keep doing things that you like, so please reach out to me on email, by Twitter. Let me know what you like, what you don't like. We want to be there for you. We want to be your daily source for the Houston Rockets. And if you stay tuned, I think you're going to be pretty pleased with what we've got lined up for you this week. Tomorrow, I'm going to have a full season preview podcast with Robert Land. He's one of my good buddies, host at HoustonSportsTalk.net, has a lot of excellent podcasts covering the Rockets as well as Houston sports as a whole. He's also host of Locked On Texans, which is our sister podcast on this great Locked On podcast network. And, well, and I should also mention, Wednesday, just 2 days from now, is the actual season opener for the Rockets in LA. So after that game, of course, we'll have full reaction, analysis, anything you guys could want. So if you stay tuned with Locked On Rockets throughout the week, I think you're going to be pretty pleased with the content. For now, on this Monday evening, I'll sign off. Again, this is Ben DuBose. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back with you again very soon.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.